Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. This is going to be a great show. I'm really excited. And I got the whole gang here. So first of all, I want to welcome back. Prescott Niles was on the show on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast about a year and a half ago, I think it was. And it's good to have him back, and we're going to go in more in depth of his playing and the different gigs that he did.
And my wardrobe too.
And your wardrobe too. That's what you got.
Thank you.
And with me, I got some people with me that I very dear friends of mine, and it's great to have them here. So I'm not all alone. I love to have company. Monique Caravella is
Hello.
Here. It's good to see you. And Lisa Carbe and
Hello.
JP Durand from
Hello,
Incendio.
Everyone.
So. I just wanted to welcome everybody here to the show. Also, too, real quick, if you saw the promo card that I had posted on the show, I want to give a very special thanks to Heidi Horvath, who let me borrow the picture of Prescott playing with Missing Persons.
Thank you, Heidi. That was wonderful of you.
She's
thank
an awesome lady, and I found out she went to Cal High. She's a Whittierite, so we're from the same city. You never know.
Well, I'm a Brooklynite.
Parents are from Brooklyn, so there are no
there
coincidences. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. And how's everybody doing? Anything you wanted to mention? I know that we were saddened by the news of David Bowie.
Yeah, so just a shout out to all fans that may be listening tonight, because I think we're all just in some way devastated and crushed. If you get any kind of heart for any incredible artistry that you could pick so many different examples at that time. So informally, right before we began the show, because this is the all-guitar show, we just kind of threw this back and forth informally and said at least involved in his career would be Mick Ronson, Robert Fripp, Earl Slick, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Peter Frampton on the Glass Spider Tour, Reeves Gabrels, Adrian Belew, Carlos Alomar, Trevor Boulder, the bassist Gail Ann Dorsey, along with so many other great players, Ertl Kizilkay, amazing people. And then there were the people he just jammed with. There's a version of him with Beck doing Gene Genie that you can see on YouTube from 73. And then the Comfortably Numb with David Gilmour. So the list goes on and on. So the man loved music and loved guitar and all forms of stuff. And Black Star is incredible. So shout out to him, condolences to his family and prayers.
Yes.
What a loss.
From all of us.
Yes. Well, all right. We got a lot to cover today, and Prescott brought a bunch of interesting basses. And what I want to talk about tonight is his musicianship. I mean, he's best known, obviously, for being in the Knack, but there's way more to him than the Knack. And I'm going to start out with a song that isn't from the Knack. It's actually a gig that he did with Josie Cotton, and it's from the movie soundtrack Valley Girl. This is called Life After Love. So let me play it, and then we'll get into it.
I can't stop thinking about
That bass line just makes the song. I just think that is so cool.
Thank you. It's the at that time period, I had gotten this golden colored G and L bass, and Rosewood. It was actually a maple neck, and I used it for a short period of time, and that was that bass. And you can hear a little bit of McCartney-ish.
Yes,
I do a lot of swoops, and it's almost like a doo-wop song from the 50s. And I love it. That was going to be a single, but it didn't work out for that album. But and I even like the title. Is there life after love? It's a good question, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Yeah. No, she wrote some pretty interesting
yeah,
songs.
That was a great one.
And yeah, it's actually in the soundtrack.
Your collaborator on that, Shay Zuro, says hello from Eden, Utah, listening on LAtalkRadio.com right now.
Shay was in a band we had called Population 5. We actually met. We were with Josie Cotton, did Valley Girl, did shows together, and then we formed our own band in shape, played mm-hmm. guitar, sang. Matt Sorum was the drummer, which was pretty amazing. Matt's come a long way, and J.B. Frank, he played keyboard, Danny Stack. But anyway, Shay was something else, and hey, Shay.
Well, the other thing that, to me, when I was listening to all these clips, and I pulled some, we're going to listen to some stuff that you probably never heard. I know for a fact because he has the only copy, I think, of it.
Yeah,
but
also
then we have some of the Knack stuff too. But I mean, one of the things you reminded me of, the way you phrase, where you build around the chord and you actually play all the notes of the chord, that was very common. One of the guys that really did a big influence on me, of course, was John Lodge. And, for example, Knights in White Satin, if you listen, he goes around the chord. You build stuff like that, and then you do these weird little turnarounds that are just very, very, very cool. And I noticed that on a lot of the stuff that you did, not just with the Knack, you did some really interesting stuff. And some of it's melodic, like McCartney.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of there was a lot of guys from the 60s, late 60s. Lodge was one of them. On Whistle actually did some. It's not the same style. I don't want to say style, but you guys, you build the harmony up from it. You're actually doing something harmonic than just the root note.
Yeah, and it's in rhythmic. It's rhythmic harmonic.
Right, very rhythmic. And he does some very interesting
thing. Well, besides Ann Whistle, who changed my life, I saw The Who when I was 16 at Fillmore, and I figured, well, I better get good fast. And Jack Cassidy, who yes. You don't have any tracks, but I picked up his style as well, and John Paul Jones was another incredible bass. Mm-hmm. And McCartney, of course, influenced me quite
well,
a bit.
Speaking of McCartney, where it's kind of, it's a little bit McCartney-ish, it's still your style. I'm going to play, this is a clip that was used for a trailer. This is you and George Harrison, if you want to set it up. And it's only available for the trailer. It was only used for the trailer.
Well, I had gotten a call, and it was one of those calls where somebody says, we need you to do a session. And I go with you because they can't tell you, just get here. Do you want to do it? And I figured, okay, sounds interesting. And it was the Sound City Studios that I got there, and I found out it was Bob Rose was producing, and it was with George Harrison. Now, I had met George Harrison when I lived in England. Lived in England from 73 to 75, and I was dating Derek Taylor's secretary, and we'd often go nightclubbing. So I actually danced with George before I played bass with him. So the fact that I actually knew him, took off some of the edge. But I was cutting in the control room. Keltner's on drums. Lawrence Juber's on guitar. And we're cutting live, and George is playing the control room. I'm in the control room and looking at him, trying to look at a chart. He's got some odd diminished chord changes. And going, okay, if you're ever not going to F up in your life, don't do it now. Even though I had, done all these other things, it was one of these very moody songs. Mm-hmm. This song was going to lead to an album. We were supposed to all go to England and record with George. And 3 weeks later, we found out that the producer was fired and Jeff Lynne took over. And as a result, I never went to England and got married and had 3 children. Otherwise, my life might have been different.
Well, yeah, they redid the song.
Yes, he did a different version, yes.
This is called Someplace Else. Let me play a little bit of it. So
Beatle,
you get an idea.
Beatle fanatic, and be aware. Wow, this is a real
and this was the movie. It was actually used for the movie trailer.
Right.
Took me a while to say, wish you belonged to me. Now I'm sad.
Now, that, it's interesting. Did George, you know, did he dictate more what he wanted, or did he just let, he just gave you the chords?
No, we just, we kind of ran through it.
Because that's very diminished. There's a lot of, well, it has that mood, though. It works for,
well,
what,
there's a difference between diminished and demented. So,
yeah, that's,
let's
true.
Just say,
that's true.
The thing was, we were working it out. Keltner had that wonderful laid back, Jim Keltner's one of the greatest drummers, very laid back feel. George hadn't really sung in a while, and so he was a little nervous, I think, himself, and it made it easy that everybody kind of, he had met Lawrence Juber before and worked with Keltner. So it probably would have been sped up just a little bit. Most tracks are. Mm-hmm. A lot of songs you try to play along with, especially even Beatle tracks, are actually almost an eighth of a quarter step sharp. But that track probably would have been sped up a bit. But the hard thing was is to not get ahead of the beat. Think mm-hmm. of a part you're going to play. Follow the chord. Think of lines. You know, that's only a portion of it. Mm-hmm. It's a four-minute song. So there's variations I actually wrote in that ended up being double on cellos, mm-hmm. which I didn't expect a credit for. But in my mind, I did. And I should have taken, you know, it's one of these moments where you wish you could have taken the picture of him mm-hmm. with me. And, of course, I just, he knew who the knack was, of course. You know, it was like, yeah, good job. Thanks, George, you know. But I just didn't, and Lawrence actually didn't even have a picture. So it's one of those moments, you know.
You know, people were asking when I had done the other show about the sessions that I did. I don't have a lot of pictures of me in the sessions because when you go in, time is money. And, you know, back then also, too, we didn't have digital cameras and cell phones where we could snap.
Hell, heck stuff. No, right.
So, you know, it wasn't something that you would do. You know, it took a little more setup to get a photo. And you just don't, it's not proper, you know, you got to get down to the
work. Well, I think in the way back of my mind, I thought maybe I'd be in England.
Yes.
Well, I'd be more comfortable taking pictures. But anyway, I had an alembic bass, which I didn't use very much. And I don't know why, but I brought that in the P bass, and that seemed to sound right. And that's what I used on that session.
There's a multi-track of that sitting somewhere. That just... You know, and when the Beatles stuff has been mined so much, there's a multi-track of that particular session sitting somewhere that has,
yeah,
needs to be remixed. You
Beatles fanatics, I mean, the fidelity of that is not good because I pulled it off of the trailer because that's right. The only place I know you can get it.
I don't think they did the final mix because I think Jeff Lynne again got involved and George figured, okay, let's, right. You know. I think that's probably it. But I'm grateful, and it's in some book, reference book, where it actually mentions the people that did the session.
Now, so, I'm gonna before we get into the, I have a bunch of stuff from the Knack that we're going to talk about, but I'm going to play another thing that this is from his private collection. So he did some sessions with Randy California of Spirit. So I'm going to play this clip, and then
can
we'll
I preface real quick?
Sure.
This was done before we did our third Knack album. After the second album, we were having differences, and Bruce and I did some sessions as a rhythm section. Randy California was a good friend of Bruce. Bruce had played with him and Spirit on occasion. And we were going to put a band together. So we did a few songs, put them together, co-wrote them, and went in and cut them rather quickly. So this is what you're going to hear.
Who's on this? Who's playing on this?
Randy California, myself, and Bruce Gary.
Bruce Gary.
Who is, to me, one of the best drummers ever.
Okay, here, I'm going to play California Man.
Surfboard on the sea. Oh, I keep on.
So there you can hear, too, during the lead, again, that kind of thing where you're kind of arpeggiating the chord and you're doom, doom,
yeah,
doom, doom, doom.
I like walking sometimes, and if the part demands it, it picks it up a little bit.
Now, what were you using on that?
That bass was the Guild.
The Guild bass.
On the three songs that Guild, the My Sharona bass.
Now, what amp were you using back then?
That particular session, I think it was. It might have been a Marshall.
Is that the Marshall with the 415s? No,
the 415s. Yeah. I have a Marshall with two 450s. If you stack them, it looks like you're in, you know, doing Spinal Tap kind of thing.
It's so awesome.
Taller than I was. But no, that's when I want to be Jack Bruce.
Yeah.
And Jack Bruce.
415s, that's got to be
and Jack, huge. If you have, well, I saw Cream, and Jack Bruce probably had that. And you couldn't, well, he was brilliant. But of course, the sound he got was very similar to that. I'm going to bring that out one day when I get a support team to help me.
Yeah, we'll have to bring JP out to stand next to it for scale. So we could, you know,
yeah.
People won't believe it's that huge. That has to be really.
But that was very quick. We recorded that and probably going to play a bit of another one very quickly. And unfortunately, Randy passed away a little while after.
Which I have two other cuts here. Do you want me to play Stand Back or California Sun?
It's your call. You do California Sun just because the opening riff's kind of cool. And again, Bruce is on that as well. Now, if you're listening, I'm actually doing a Jack Bruce kind of pattern, and Bruce had worked with Jack Bruce, Bruce Gary, so that added a little bit of extra.
And that's the Guild, too.
That's the Guild, and
that's
if you notice, when we went into the chorus, he went into a halftime.
Right.
He used the toms, and again, a lot of drummers would go to a ride. The halftime is so... it's so huge when you break it down with the toms. And again,
well, Bruce, he did session work.
I kept missing playing with Bruce. He auditioned for another band I was in. But when I came back to L.A., he went back to England. And then, long story, we kept missing each other. And he was the one to call me to come down and audition for Doug, Burton, and Bruce. And that's when the Knack really became the Knack.
Well, you were around some interesting times.
There are some tremendous intersections of plowed through a whole history of rock and roll for all the Hendrix fellow Hendrix fanatics out there. Bruce Gary was a fellow Hendrix fanatic.
Yes,
And you had Randy California, who was actually in the Blue Flames beforehand. You worked with Velvet Turner, so in the early part of your career, the Hendrix theme plays through it quite in a really interesting, surprising way.
And it changed my life. When I had met Velvet, he came down to audition as a blues singer. Velvet, I guess I should call him an African-American. Even though then it didn't really, but he was like 6'2", had these weird clothes on. He was auditioning as a blues singer. Afterwards, I met him and said, "What's going on?" And he said, Yeah, where'd you get your clothes from? He said, "Jimmy gave me the shirt." "Jimmy who?" "Jimmy Hendrix." I go, "Really?" Yeah, I'm from New York. I'm going, "Really? Sure. What else are you going to sell me?"
That's real Brooklyn.
So anyway, a few months later, we kept in touch. He said, "You want to go to a concert with me?" And then we're going to go to Jimmy's 25th birthday party. I'm going, yeah, sure. So we saw Jimmy at Philharmonic Hall, and then we went to his 25th birthday party, Cheetah. I got 15 feet of him because that's about all my heart could stand. Mm-hmm. He's one of those cats. Jimmy's one of those guys. I mean, people radiate vibrations, and he didn't have to say anything. And I'm not making this up to make him more magical or mystical than he was. He was a special, special person. But as a result of that, I had met Jimmy on a couple of occasions, got to get backstage at a lot of Fillmore shows, and probably changed my life because it showed me another side of rock and roll that I never would have been privileged to if not for that. Anyway, cutting back, when Jimmy passed away, I had come to California in June. Jimmy passed in September, and Velvet called me and said, Prescott, come back to New York. People want to give us a record deal. We went into the studio. We cut a song called Freedom. And next thing you know, we're up in Woodstock. I'd been at Woodstock, by the way, which we have to talk about one day. We were up in Woodstock signing signing a record deal with Michael Lang, who promoted Woodstock, Velvet. And we got a deal with Paramount, $100,000, came to L.A. Tom Wilson was producer, and Gary Kellgren, and we went to Record Plant. Problem was, Velvet was not Jimmy. So the pressure, he was a good songwriter, but the pressure got, and we did the album, and that's kind of the history of it. But because of Velvet, again, I had the privilege to be around Jimmy, and right. It changed my life as a result.
Well, let's hear a little bit of those sessions. I'm going to play Strangely New.
This is a song I wrote, and it was on that Fender that you're looking at, my old Fender.
Oh. Okay, check this out, and then I have another one that you'll see the Hendrix influence. It's just for JP. Here's Strangely New. You can hear that. I mean, you're just going to town there.
Well, that was Roto, a fresh set of Roto Sound strings.
That's a great sound. That open.
Now, I was trying to be Ronnie Wood. I had seen Ronnie Wood play with Jeff Beck, and he had this sound, twangy. I mean, Entwistle was my hero, of course.
It reminded
me. So there's some of Entwistle, but... And Wetzel did play Fenders, Precisions, right. Earlier on. Anyway, that was one of the songs I wrote. And
what amp did you use on that?
For that session, now you're really tweaking my brain. I don't know. I'll guess. I'll say a Marshall.
It was a Marshall?
It could have been a Marshall.
It wasn't a Fender.
412s. Okay. Definitely wasn't a Fender. It wouldn't have the thing to it.
And again, with the underlying thought of the intertwining of the rock and roll, Tom Wilson, legendary producer of Dylan and the early Zappa, and Gary Kellgren... Who was at Mayfair and started the record plant here and recorded Burning of the Midnight Lamp, the first American engineer to work with Hendrix.
Well, you could definitely hear the Hendrix influence.
But I'm around these people, and I knew a little bit about Tom Wilson, of course, years later. I'm going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, like I was around him, of all people, brilliant, brilliant man, very intelligent.
Now, you have to remember, these sessions were around 1972, if I'm correct.
That one, yeah. Yeah, we did two versions. We did most of the album. Kellgren split, dropped out of the project. Then Artie Lang from Family Productions got involved, who had Jimmy, why am I blanking on his name? Billy, what am I talking about? Your Life was the name again, you know? Billy Joel. Billy Joel was a songwriter that Artie represented. And
that's why in the family
family production. So we'd hear Billy writing songs in whatever room
Right.
We got involved anyway. So the story went: we recorded some of the songs. I had seen Yes play at the Whiskey the same week and got a Rick the next week. By the way, so that's on another song. Here you go.
Well, I'm going to play another clip from this. It's called "Excuse Me, Gentlemen." And remember, this is 72, and it's a real kind of a grungy type of bass sound. It's really, it's got a lot of distortion in it.
And this just came out, by the way. You're hearing these tracks. They were re-released in Germany and parts of Europe, and, you know, people are rediscovering the album.
But this is years before grunge and the, some of the stuff.
Yeah.
This bass is nasty. You're going to love it. And you, it's obvious. You'll see here the Hendrix. Let me play that thing. "Excuse Me, Gentlemen."
Died the other day, but shit, what police say? It was killed by space pirates and moon marauders. But what we really like to do is bring in a brand new order.
Now, what that's, I mean, for a minute, when I first heard it, I'm like, oh, am I clipping this? I got to check this. But that's that sound. You're over, what do you do? Just overdriving the amp?
We recorded that at Paramount. And that because that Fender doesn't have paint on it, varnish, if you crank up the treble all the way, you got bright strings on it, that just thing gets nasty. And again, when I'm hearing this track, it's so funny to hear. Actually, Velvet was trying to sound like Mick Jagger. "Excuse Me, Gentlemen" from Memo to Turner.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually channeling that. This song's about Atlantis and the end of whatever. But Tim McGovern, let me mention this. Tim McGovern was the drummer. Tim McGovern ended up playing guitar with the Motels. A number of other bands you probably know about, Tim, Bone Daddies. He was a brilliant, people underestimate the power of drumming. That album, again, if we had a normal drummer, it wouldn't have worked. His drumming was as good as Mitch's in his own way. He was brilliant, and he made that album really happen. Kudos to you, Tim, wherever you are.
Well, all of those riffs, especially when you're doubling with Velvet, who wrote those riffs?
Which riffs?
Did you guys work that?
Some of them, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's obvious that you're playing exactly the same thing in some of those pieces. How did that work out?
Well, some of those,
was that charted or you just...
No, it didn't chart them at all. I mean, those two were actually together, and then the middle section, you heard the soft section. I was doing Paul McCartney. Mm-hmm. I was doing the high things, trying to think, what would he play? just trying to... That's the thing, when you have a vocabulary of musical riffs in your head because you've studied different people's styles, you're just borrowing ideas that you never would have come up with if you hadn't had it. And it is a vocabulary of harmonies or rhythms or something that happens to fit. And that's why I encourage people, and have taught as you as well, people really need to play there and get to know their instrument well and other people's styles to know what could fit and what not fit, rather than just play stock parts that are just get to be tedious,
It is always good to wonder what the walrus would do. That is totally on the money.
I love that
you did that. That's so cool.
Well, it is true. I mean, some of the stuff, going through all the material, and even the stuff on the Knack, he does his palette.
It's a wide variety,
Right, and I'm going to play a clip now. This clip, it's actually from the Knack. But to me, it doesn't sound anything like the Knack, but it's very, very cool. It's very, very funky. Now, I pulled two sections together. I'm trying to show all the bass parts. The song's called Africa, and it's from...
Round Trip. It's kind of, the vocal is more like a tone poem, Doug. In other words, Burton and myself loved Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Very much. And Burton really came up with a lot of the music for that track, and then Doug did the kind of the lyric thing. But it was just like Jack Douglas was our produced that album, said, "This is great, let's do it." And okay. we really, and this is a very hard track.
This is a cool track, but it's a whole other side.
Best drumming.
It's a whole other side. Okay. Yeah, but your bass playing is different than anything I've ever. It's great.
I was channeling Chuck Rainey.
That's a great trivia. If you ever want to stump Buddy, say, who played that song?
I would never guess
that was in that.
Nope.
Never.
I like that when Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty were making on their way to the stage with you at the Troubadour, you secretly wanted to channel Verdeen White. That's awesome to me. That's so cool.
The only thing, I had to get the white boots and levitate, but I never got that far. But if you're hearing those bass parts, you can hear some Verdeen.
You're doing all these fun things that I remember hearing.
But if you hear the drum track again, I'm not exactly sure what Bruce is, some of the fills he's doing, because we were really synced because we've been playing together. That drum track is incredible. And Picaro.
He reminds me of the drummer that used to play with Gino Vanelli. Brother.
Well, he's like Picaro. He's brilliant. And that track is hard. And again, the drum sound he got was incredible.
And then you got the brass, that's really cool.
There was a little bit of a sax solo that Tom Scott played on it too. It was a good album, but it was one of those things. Capo picked the wrong single, and
well, that is a big. I mean, for people that are, I know how you know how the record companies look at you. They're looking, where's your next My Sharona, and they're not thinking about that. But that song is so different.
Well, there's a few other things in that album. That's why it's one of my favorites. The problem is, what really bothered me more than the fact, you know, obviously if we had a better manager and people understood and got to know who we were as people, we would have got a better shake. But because Sharona became so big, we were like very hard to pin down. We were traveling a lot. Essentially, we were great musicians. And we didn't need session players to fix parts. I mean, Bruce's drumming Sharona was one take, as I told you before. That track took a couple, but those are us playing the parts. And I compare that to a lot of so-called great session players.
Yeah.
That's what I was most proud of with the band.
No, that's tight. I mean, and what bass were you using on that?
That was my P bass.
Yeah. I'm like, if that's the Guild... I'm going to die right here.
No, the P bass. The thing about that P bass or other is a bottom end thing to it that unlike anything else. And Jack loved it. I used it on a few songs in that record. And again, the kick drum was incredible.
Well, here's another. I'm going to play another cut from that album. It's more traditional. It's Radiating Love. Can you want to set
also?
That up?
Yeah, I'm going to be selling it outside of my trunk of my car after the session. Okay. I need some money.
Okay. All right, here we go. Radiating Love. We'll be right back. that's just that this tie. I mean, that was Jack Douglas, right?
Yeah,
great power pop, man. Wow,
yeah.
Wow,
it
just driving
the kick and bass. That was the P bass, but you notice when I'm doing dum bum bum my slides, I'm doing glissando, hitting the upper A or hammering it, and it makes the part. And, McCartney again, but I do it my way. But that again, you hear the precision. You have it gets a little nasty up there.
Yeah, it's great. No, I mean that's a solid track. That's more that'd be more what people would think of as a Knack song.
And actually, in the middle section, you never got to. Flo and Eddie did background vocals too.
Flo and it
was the Turtles. Yeah.
The Turtles. Yeah.
I love the way that intro drum fill moved back. Oh yeah, the headphones too.
Yeah, they pan them cool. too. Some of Bruce's toms.
And then that phase. He was using the flanging like Hendrix.
Mm-hmm. So. That's such the impressive thing about listening to you in various contexts is that there are distinct strains coming out of the 60s and 70s of playing. You have a Motown and a Chuck Rainey school of just really keeping the pop great.
Yeah.
You have Jack Cassidy, the rock school. And then there were these guys. I mean, before it was worrying about locking to a kick drum, there was a melodic thing that you had to have that was very, very common. You hear a lot of those late 60s, early 70s soundtrack things, right? Even Jesus Christ Superstar, sometimes mm-hmm. everybody's just going like this and the bass is flying like everywhere.
Right.
It's not a common approach. And I think all three of those informed your playing. If you're listening to In Whistle on one hand and Chuck Rainey on the other hand and Stax, stuff,
right.
Which is just really in that pocket, you are a representation of
well, you're definitely a melodic bass player. You're not just a pulse timekeeper.
You have to see Missing Persons because I'm cranked up and I'm doing some dancing, and
right.
I play a lot of notes. The Knack, I mean, I use a thumb pick, as you can tell, it's attached, surgically attached to my thumb, because when I started playing with the Knack, I'm doing thousands of eighth notes, da 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 da, and I play with a pick, but I like switching a lot, so the thumb pick was perfect for me because I can do the muting and then switch to open fingers and go back and forth.
So use both, yeah.
And a lot of people to this day come up and go, "What do you got on your hand?" I go, "What do you mean? Is that a thumb pick?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "I never thought of that idea."
Folks definitely should get out to see Missing Persons with this gentleman on bass because it takes the material to a different place. Certainly, that band started out with tremendous players, Patrick O'Hearn on bass, Terry Buzzard. There was a very, very solid musical grounding to that, and Dale sounded great then and still sounds fantastic now, but the band that's underneath it is churning and she's kind of let it loose and
well, let's mention now because you've got an upcoming day. Let's talk about that real quick.
What he was saying is basically really quickly, I try to give it a rock edge. And we don't do My Sharona yet. I guess we'll save that for someplace special.
That'd be interesting here, Dale.
Yeah, we'll just have to get an octave drop for her. I've done different. In a solo I do, I sometimes will do a reggae, whatever. But anyway, we're privileged. iHeartRadio is putting together a show at the Forum on February 20th with Rick Springfield, Culture Club Boy George coming back from wherever he's been, Tears for Fears, Loverboy, and Missing Persons.
Wow. Loverboy.
And that'll be at the Forum, which has an incredible sound system, from what I've heard.
They were gone. Weren't they working on the weekend? Ba-dum-bum.
I was with you till then. It seemed like those were kind of 87, but Loverboy a little more on the rock side. It seemed like the odd
thing. Yeah.
Missing Persons is rock. It's not,
Well, it's kind of, it was more electronica, but you can make it relevant to today without sounding too mechanical. And
right.
Listen, the drummer who's playing with us, I mean, we had worked with Terry Bozzi. We did that album called Zoom, which mm-hmm. I gave you a copy of. Terry did do an album with us, and fortunately we did part of a tour before it was cursed when Jack Kevorkian came to our dressing room, mm-hmm. which is another – I don't know if you want me to tell that story. Do we have any time, by the way?
If you want to, you can go ahead. I mean,
well, I think just weird moments in life that you'll never forget. It's like watching The Twilight Zone.
We're all intrigued. When you mentioned that name, all three of us went, what are you talking about?
Well, anyway, Doug's brother was a lawyer, Jeffrey Feiger, and we were playing Detroit, and Doug's brother would sometimes get up and introduce us. So we're in the dressing room getting ready to play with Terry Bozzio, and he brings this old guy into the dressing room, and I'm just thinking, who's this guy? Is he his uncle, his brother? Who knows? Mm-hmm. He introduces him to Terry, and he's Jack Kevorkian.
That's rock and roll.
So I'm thinking to myself,
Somebody died?
So no. I looked now. Myself and Burton Navarre, we used to have a joke. We call it KK, which is Nat Karma. Whenever anything went bad, would go bad. And I looked at him and I said, Burton, this tour is over. You know that, don't you? And now, I got to finish. Now, I didn't shake his hand. But I got to tell you what happened, okay? I got to tell you. I didn't avoid shaking his hand because of belief systems. I just didn't feel comfortable.
Sure. Okay.
After the show, the next day, Doug got sick. He was on steroids. 2 days later, we had to drop some keys to D that were in E because all of a sudden he couldn't sing. Terry Bozzio got a bad case of bronchitis. The tour was over in 8 days.
Oh, my gosh.
It was over. Rhino, we were with for the... It's a great album, Zoom. They just re-released it on Omnivore. Anyway, they weren't selling it properly anyway. Terry had been doing a lot of promos for himself, making a lot of money. I mean, we had Terry Bozzio in a freaking U-Haul van driving. He's making $5,000 a week, just sleeping, you know, and while we're traveling. But I love Terry, and he was a big asset to the show. And for a while, and
I'm gonna play.
He got sick. The tour was over, and that was it. So I was right, and I hate
KK
that thing.
Kevorkian put the final nail in the
coffin. He sure did.
That's right. Well, I'm gonna play it. Here's a clip of Abazia. This is Harder on You from Zoom.
It is a song. Yeah, it was supposed to be a single.
Okay, so here it is, and you can hear the difference in the drums. It's dramatic. Love that snare. It's just like, let's Snaps. Not dampen that thing at all.
You know, I forgot about this, but this is a good time to just give a shout out to Cheryl Pavelski and Omnivore Records that are doing such a tremendous job of finding all these rock bands and unreleased recordings and doing great, great stuff over there. I'd forgotten that the Knack stuff was on Omnivore. So many great acts are coming over there, and so many fantastic reissues are coming out of that company. Well done.
They released the live album, which you're going to end the show with, I believe. There's a live at the Whiskey and Troubadour. There's a they re-released Zoom live at the whatever the show we did, whatever, and also Normal is the next.
Yeah,
guy,
there's a 78 the Troubadour stuff. Concert. I don't know what year the Rock and Roll Funhouse was.
Funhouse was in
2001?
2001, yeah.
Okay, so
They know their pop
different
over
drummer.
There. They've released Pugwash, they've done Jellyfish, and their catalog
They're
is
incredible.
Now on the Knack. That's awesome.
And we thank them.
Yeah, now, who was the producer for Zoom?
Zoom was co-produced by Doug and Richard Bosworth.
Okay, Doug.
And up till then, Mike Chapman did our first two albums, and Mike's a god. Jack Douglas did our third album, and Don Was did our other album.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next. I'm going to play the single for the one for...
Oh, you are? Thank you.
This is called Rocket of Love. It's from the album Serious Fun.
And Billy Ward played drums on it from New York.
Okay.
New York
and this, listen, totally different type of mix. I mean, it's great. It's solid, and it's very
and it was
nat.
Actually an FM hit, so we did have more than one hit. We'll
just, that's great. Just takes it out of the ballpark right there. Great bass riffs. Those little lines you're doing. You're doing all these little turnarounds and stuff on there. Which bass?
That was, believe it or not, my Entwistle Explorer Alembic, which I used.
That's the Alembic. God, that's a great
sound. Things weigh a ton, don't they?
No. That wasn't bad. Right,
but it's interesting that, I mean, the sound from, I mean, the difference in the producers.
Yeah, John was. Very Japanese. Doug was friends with Don, and we were with Charisma Records, which folded and so did the album. But now, it was a really good album.
KK, once again.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to play real quick because we're out of, well, actually, we won't have enough time. I want to go around. Okay, so we already mentioned that you're playing at the Forum. Any other gigs coming up that we can mention?
No, none that anybody's particularly want to drive to. We do a lot of Orange County gigs. We did Santa Ana. We might be doing Pomona, Sonoma, Ramona, or any of those.
Prescott's on Prescott's on Facebook.
No, not Ramona.
Where else can you find information about playing with Missing Persons? What's the website?
Well, there is a Missing Persons website. Whether it's up or down, I don't know. But in Facebook, I usually list places. There is Polestar usually has Missing Persons.
Okay,
shows
so
Dale.
That these new if they're playing
and
in
Dale
County.
And Dale got the trademark back recently, so we will.
Good.
It's not
okay.
Dale Bozeman.
Now, real quick, JP and Lisa, you guys are going back east
to New York City. We'll be at the APAP conference this Friday and Saturday, performing showcases, and then across the country, including shows in Tempe and the San Jose Winter Jazz Fest at the Jade Garden in San Jose in March. So we're getting busy.
Okay, and then I'm happy to announce you have a place.
Yes. Yay. Hi, it's Monique.
Monique.
Yes.
The shingle is out.
Give them the information on if they need any work, because you now have
anyone,
a bench.
If anyone needs a guitar love, I'm working out of North Hollywood, and you can reach me by email on momo.allaboutguitar@gmail.com, and we'll help you out.
Where's it at? Where's the place?
I'm working out of Valley Sound Tech. It's on Cahuenga between Burbank and Magnolia.
And she's already been talking. They're already going to be working on her bass.
She just looked at six of my basses and go, honey, this needs some love. So I guess she's taking them on with her.
Yes. I have a new client.
yes. But anyway, I just want to thank everybody in Prescott.
It's been a real pleasure.
I didn't even get a chance to play Soul Kitchen when he played with Ray Manzarek. I mean, but we'll have to do that.
That
just means you have
day.
To come back.
I'd
love to come back.
Time.
But anyway, thank you for helping share some of my life and, again, musicians.
And I'm going to post some pictures. We didn't get a chance to talk about the different bases. He brought a whole bunch of bases. We'll take some pictures of them, and I'll post that up so you'll get to see them.
Yeah, you better hurry up. They'll be in the pawn shop tomorrow morning. Come on.
Okay, I'm going to, before we leave, let me set up this last clip.
Yes.
It's part of the album is called Rock and Roll Funhouse 2001 Live.
Are you doing Rave Up?
And this is called Having a Rave Up. And this will...
This came out too.
This definitely will get your juices flowing. This is pretty... This is... if you haven't had any coffee, you don't need it after this one. Everybody have a great week. We will see you next week.
Thanks
Thank you so
Happy
much.
Happy New Year.
Bye.
Well, I don't know about you,